Where are we at in our studies? Well, we've been taken on a journey back in history to see the times of Deborah and Barak. Obviously, a time of bloodshed and violence marked by a lack of faithless leadership. And as such of that, they fell into disarray and turned to idols, and God sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who mightily oppressed them. And so in their distress, they sought God's help in their activities. And of course, God's going to work through the remarkable woman in this chapter, both Deborah and Jael, and is going to bring about a work amongst the nation, inspiring Barak to step forward in his God-given role as the judge who was appointed and to lead the nation and to take captivity captive. And we'll have a little bit of look at that in our exhortation in terms of the title. But we see a woman, Deborah, stand up, who was the support, the nourisher of the nation, the mother in Israel, to stand up and guide a failing nation to inspire change. And we left Barak on the battlefield coming across the gruesome scene with Jael, with the hammer dangling down her side, covered in blood, opening the tent door and ushering Barak in and saying, "Have a look in there, because in here is, I think, the man that you seek." Right? It must have been such a shock and such a sight. And so he comes into the tent, and as we said in our final closing remarks, we saw him understand for the first time, "Has not Yahweh gone out before thee?" And he sees that Yahweh will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman, and it all dawns on him that God is in control, that God has the power, that God can work with anyone. And he comes into an understanding of all of this, and it says, therefore, in verse 23 of Judges chapter 4, "So God subdued on that day Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the children of Israel. And the hand of the children of Israel prospered and prevailed against Jabin, king of Canaan, until they had destroyed Jabin, king of Canaan." Now, brothers and sisters, we could read that very quickly and skip the significance of that few verses. Because, brothers and sisters, who has Barak been fighting? Barak wasn't fighting Jabin, king of Canaan, as such in this story. In the previous few verses, who had been fighting? The answer was he'd been fighting Sisera and his entire army. Why does the record now say, "So God subdued on that day Jabin, king of Canaan"? Well, you see, I think what happens next is remarkable. We see the battle against Sisera was actually just a prelude to the main event. It was the battle against Sisera was the main course. Dessert remained, and it was the dessert that was reserved for Jabin, king of Canaan. Because you see, what now happens is Barak sees God's hand amongst the nation. And now he's inspired beyond belief to rally the troops to take back the entire territory that Jabin had stolen, and that they might seize their inheritance that their parents had failed to grasp. And so Jabin, as a catalyst now, sees the opportunity to finish once and for all what his parents had failed to achieve. And so it says in the record, "The hand of the children of Israel prospered and prevailed," and really means, like it says in the margin, was going. They went, and it was hard. And it was hard against Jabin, king of Canaan. Why? You see, because the initial battle had been won, but the war was not over. And the Barak now, with the help of the nation of Israel that now joined him, now reverses the 20-year oppression that they had been mightily oppressed by. And Barak led his people from being a hesitant commander to being the ultimate leader to overthrow Jabin, king of Canaan. It didn't end, brothers and sisters and young people, with Sisera's death. It ended when they finally had taken all their faithless parents had failed to take. But I want you to notice something remarkable, because this is true leadership, brothers and sisters. You read carefully what it says in verse 23 and 24 again. "So God subdued on that day." You see, they now could see God's hand. And he subdued Jabin, king of Canaan, before who? Before the children of Israel, and the hand of the children of Israel prospered. You see, this wasn't Barak, brothers and sisters and young people. Of course Barak's there, of course Deborah's there, but Barak's leadership had now inspired a nation to stand up themselves and to take control. See the power of what we're reading in Judges chapter 4? You see, where's Barak in the verse? The answer is, well, he was leading them. But the record wants to point out for us that Barak had learned his lesson on what leadership was all about. And the children of Israel had understood their role in what it was all about because they stepped forward like Barak had stepped forward and execute exactly what God wanted. Barak had learned the fundamental lesson of true leadership, hadn't he? That true leadership is all about service, not glory. He had led his people. Deborah and Yahweh taught Barak on that day that in order for God to be honored, for order God to be glorified, self, human pride, and human achievement had to be taken to a back seat and thrown under the bus, brought under subjection so that others might be motivated to lead, so that others might take their role and responsibility, so that others might understand the purpose of God. You see, true leadership is about service, not glory. And to Barak's credit, brothers and sisters and young people, he understood that for the first time. It wasn't about him. Barak thought the whole thing was about him at the beginning. But now, everything was obvious. And motivated by Yahweh's deliverance on that day, he steps aside as he leads the nation, and they take their position. It's a remarkable story, isn't it, brothers and sisters, of what true leadership can really do and inspire. And so now Deborah and Barak come back in Judges chapter 5. After the battle against Jabin, king of Canaan, after they had seized their inheritance, and Deborah and Barak sing a song, fully inspired by their victory over both Sisera and all his host, and now against over Jabin and his entire empire, having secured all that territory, they come back to open their mouth and to praise their God and to bless the people that had offered themselves willingly in God's service. And this song is both a song of praise to God for what he accomplished. It was a song of thanks to the brethren who volunteered and jeopardized their lives. It's going to be a song of reprimand, where reprimanding those who refused and ignored to help their brethren. It's going to be a song of blessing to bless Jael for her courage and her zeal. And it's going to be finally, at the very end, a petition requesting for God's enemies to be annihilated and to support all those who fight to seize their inheritance. And that's really the breakdown of the song, brothers and sisters. Praise, thanks, reprimand, blessing, and petition. And so we're introduced in verse 2 to the theme of volunteer leadership. And in verse 3 to 5, we're going to see the power of God's presence, like in times of old, like in past times. And then verses 6 to 8, we're going to see the context that arrived, that the battle was nestled within. What was it like during the times? What was it so remarkable about their work and their achievement? Then we're going to see the blessing that Deborah gives and Barak gives for those that volunteered, and the cursing, therefore, in verses 15 to 23 of those that did not, the slackers that chose to ignore the call. And verses 24 to 27 is the blessing for Jael's heroic actions. Verses 28 to 30 is the picture of the ultimate destruction of Sisera's mum, which we'll consider on Thursday night. And then finally, the summary that God might totally support all those who fought their enemies. And so we pick up the story in this song in verse 1. Then sang Deborah and Barak, the son of Abinoam, on that day, saying, "Praise ye Yahweh for the avenging of Israel, when the people willingly offered themselves." Do you know, we'll come back to this. If you want this breakdown, we'll put it up at the end. Okay? So I'll carry on. Otherwise, we might be here a bit later than we need to. And I want to stick to time tonight. We can. So there's a connection between the leadership and the volunteers and for how it worked, you see. So praise Yahweh for the avenging of Israel when the people willingly offered themselves. And it's better translated, for the revealing of leadership in Israel, for the volunteering of the people. It's better translated that way. For the revealing of leadership in Israel, for the volunteering of the people. And so hopefully you can see that I'm not just making it up, that this whole thing's about leadership, because Deborah's telling us exactly that that was the challenge, that was the issue. It's all about leadership. And what God did on this particular occasion is reveal the leadership that was required amongst the people. And they responded by volunteering. And Deborah sees these two things go hand in hand together as to how this victory was actually accomplished. And she wants to thank, or they both want to thank Yahweh, that in this leadership vacuum, that God had supported people to stand up, to inspire one another, so that they volunteered and a response amongst his people occurred. And what was the thing that she was so thankful for outside of just God, but that the people willingly offered themselves? You see, it was when leadership was restored and demonstrated that faithful examples also came up of courage, and that stirred a response amongst the people that willingly gave themselves. And I want you to notice something, brothers and sisters. Look what she says. When the people, she praises Yahweh for the avenging of Israel, when the people willingly offered themselves. You see, we've got to read that a little bit carefully because it means more than what it says. Because when it says they offered themselves, they didn't just volunteer. What does it mean that they offered themselves? They didn't just volunteer. It means they volunteered their lives. That's what it really means. They volunteered their lives. They willingly offered themselves. They put themselves up as a sacrifice. They willingly gave themselves, says Deborah and Barak. And the point, brothers and sisters, is that Deborah and Barak and Jael's example had inspired others to stand up in to join that fight, to eradicate Jabin's army and restore the control of the territory that they had lost. And I want you to notice carefully who Deborah and Barak are singing the song to. Who are they singing the song to? Verse 3. Hear, O ye kings, and give ear, O ye princes. Even I will sing unto Yahweh. I will sing praise to Yahweh Elohim of Israel. Who's she singing to? To kings and to princes. Now, hang on a minute. There's no kings in Israel at this time. Therefore, there's no princes in Israel at this time. So who's she singing to, brothers and sisters? Well, I think that Deborah and Barak were singing not to the people of Israel, but a warning to every other neighboring oppressive nation that their kings and their princes might listen up to what was about to hit them next. They wanted them and all the enemies of Yahweh to stand up and be ready because, oh boy, this was coming to their territory next. They wanted to inspire all the other tribes across the nation of Israel to fulfill the mission that they had failed to finish in Joshua 23 and Judges 1, to seize their inheritance completely. Deborah and Barak wanted to put the kings and princes of the Philistines, the Canaanites, the Sidonians, and the Hivites on notice because their days were numbered. And you know that's true. You know how I know that's true, brothers and sisters. You turn to the last verse of this song. Look what Deborah says as she finishes the song. So let all thine enemies perish, O Yahweh. But let them that love him be as the sun when he goes forth in his might. You see, this song wasn't a song sung to the nation of Israel. This was a song sung to all the nations around them as a warning to what was about to be seen on their back door. If only this inspiration might occur, that Judah and Benjamin might continue the fight and that all the rest of the nations might now roll back on their inheritances. and are singing to Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, the memorial name of Yahweh, the memorial name that represented God's faithfulness to maintain his promises and the fact that he would protect his people from destruction. Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, given at the burning bush, that Israel would never be consumed. And so now, brothers and sisters, Deborah and Barak address God himself. Verse 4, Yahweh, they say, when thou wentest out of Seir, when thou marchest out of the field of Edom, the earth trembled, and the heavens dropped, and the clouds, they also dropped water, and the mountains melted from before Yahweh, even that Sinai from before Yahweh, Elohim of Israel. And Deborah now builds a picture of what had happened as God arrives at Mount Tabor. And yet in a way, brothers and sisters, as we saw in our last class, she's alluding to another song of another remarkable leader in Israel, and the song of Moses in Deuteronomy in chapter 33. I want you to come back with me now to Deuteronomy chapter 33, and I'm going to show you how Deborah is using the song of Moses and the environment and the context to which Moses sings the song in the way in which Deborah sees how this all links as part of God's purpose. Deuteronomy 33. What's the context of Deuteronomy 33, brothers and sisters? Well, Deuteronomy 32 has got Moses just finishing singing the nation and just talking about the situation at the end of the wilderness wanderings on the borders of the promised land. And he's just finished telling them what was going to happen. He's been telling them about their deliverance from Egypt, the way in which God provided for them in the food, and how that he brought them into a fruitful land, and the promotion, therefore, of Israel was going to be as the head of the nations, and that they were going to ride on the high places of the earth as Yahweh's people. And that's the point of chapter 32, is look at what God can do for you. And he turns in Deuteronomy 33, and he turns to bless the people. Look what he says in verse 1, and this is the blessing wherewith Moses, the man of God, blesses the children of Israel before his death. And what does he say? And he said, Yahweh came from Mount Sinai and rose up from Seir unto them. He shined forth from Mount Paran and came with 10,000 of his saints. And from his right hand went a fiery law for them. Yea, he loved the people. All his saints are in thy hand. And they sat down at thy feet. Every one shall receive of thy words. And so what Moses does, brothers and sisters, is he blesses the people. He says, oh, I see Israel about to embark upon their escapades amongst the nation. Right? There they are on the borders of the promised land. And he sees them about to burst out. And he says to them, he says, oh, I see this working in exactly the same way as they came out of Egypt. They were going to burst forth in full glory, even as Yahweh came from Mount Seir and descended upon Mount Sinai. And he came with 10,000 of his saints in full glory to give them the fiery law. Now we see, brothers and sisters, why perhaps God asks Barak to go and collect, why? 10,000 men and go up to the top of Mount Tabor. Why did God ask Barak to collect 10,000 men? The answer was, brothers and sisters, is that Deborah and Barak saw what transpired as the nation left the bondage of Egypt and they threw off the shackles of the Pharaoh that had oppressed them and pursued across the wilderness into seizing their inheritance as this flood that came out. And the majesty and the splendor that came as Yahweh was seen in his saints was going to be seen once more amongst the nation to save his people, and that God would restore his law amongst them once again. That's how Deborah sees the song. You see, the parallel is stark, isn't it? Here's the similarities to the Exodus. You see, Judges chapter 4 and verse 3, the people's deliverance occurs from bondage and oppression. It's exactly the same in the time of Moses. There was a reluctance of a leader to respond, just as it was in the time of Barak and as with Moses and Aaron. There was therefore the support that would be provided for them in the wilderness by the Kenites in exactly the same way as the story of Judges. She saw that there would be a deliverance from horsemen and chariots being rendered useless by water, just like it was in the Exodus. And that God's promise of deliverance would actually happen, and that was foretold, just like it had done during the time of Moses, as in the time of Barak. And now there was complete destruction on that battlefield. There was not a man left, quote unquote, Exodus 14, verse 28. You couldn't miss it, brothers and sisters. See, Deborah and Barak see all of the story of Judges 4 and 5 as a repeat, a rinse and repeat by God of the events of Yahweh's majestic deliverance and the establishment of his kingdom and law and order being put once more amongst his people. It's remarkable, isn't it, brothers and sisters? What Deborah and Barak could see as they looked at the story, we see it all over again, that God will always look out for his people. And back in the story in Judges chapter 5, Deborah and Barak looked back at the nation. And they wanted to compare both the state that they saw that Yahweh would create and manage for them versus the state that they had been in. And you couldn't get a more stark contrast, could you? Because they come back in Judges chapter 4 and verse 6, when they go, in the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were unoccupied. The travelers walked through byways. Leadership ceased, or the inhabitants of the villages, the word villages is chief or rulers. There was no rulership seen in Israel. They ceased all over the land. Until that I, Deborah, arose. I arose, a mother in Israel. There was no one to be seen. No volunteers. No people. No saints. No 10,000 men. No Yahweh manifested. No, it was a disaster what they saw. Highways were empty. No travelers could be seen. Everyone was hiding. It was so bad that any form of leadership had ceased until Deborah stood up. The mother in Israel, as we've already looked at before, the nourisher of the nation. And so Deborah saw that need for leadership. Examples of faith were trying to stand up. Shamgar had stood up and slew men. Ehud had stood up, but the nation had fallen into disarray. No one following. The people were unresponsive. Why? Why were they unresponsive? Verse 8 says, well, they'd chosen new gods. They weren't following Yahweh, Elohim of Israel. They'd chosen new gods. And there was war in the gates. They'd chosen new gods. They'd disregarded the warning of Moses in Deuteronomy 32, verses 16 to 21, where he had said to them, you be careful, else, and not, don't turn to idolatry, else there'll be war amongst you. And sure enough, bang, here it was. War was now there in their gates. Brothers and sisters, there's a massive lesson for us, isn't there, in that? If we're not contributing to our ecclesias and volunteering, we have to ask ourselves the question, why not? If we're not doing anything in our ecclesia, you have to ask the question, why not? Do you know, the number one reason why we often don't volunteer is quite simply we're serving ourselves. We're not serving others. And we've got to remove self, and we've got to serve. We've got to check which God we're actually serving. What are we doing in our ecclesias, brothers and sisters and young people, if we're not contributing to our ecclesias? The answer is, we're choosing new gods. And there will be war in the gate. There is another reason for the reluctance to volunteer. What does it say in verse 8? They chose new gods. There was war in the gates. Was there a shield or a spear seen amongst 40,000 in Israel? They had no weapons of war. As we said, they were fighting tanks with toothpicks. Why was there no weapons of war amongst the nation? We know why, because they had chosen other gods, but there's a fool, because in the face of this sort of opposition and challenge, they stepped up to show great leadership and gave of themselves. They gave their lives willingly. And look at who these people were, brothers and sisters. Verse 9 says, "My heart is toward the governors of Israel that offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless ye Yahweh." Who were these willing volunteers? My heart is towards, the Hebrew word for governors means to cut or to engrave or to inscribe or to mark out. It's probably better translated, the law givers. It's the same word in verse 14 when we're given more detail when he says in verse 14, or she says, those that handle the pen of the writer. Those that handle the pen of the writer. Who were these people? We see these were the scribes who, like Ezra, were the recorders of history and therefore were the Bible students of the law and an understanding of the truth. These are the ones that kept the record of the history and that wrote out the law and expounded its message for the people. Why is that fascinating, brothers and sisters? Well, what's fascinating about that is that the governors put down their pens, to pick up swords. Just in case you're wondering what we were talking about. They put down their pens to pick up swords for the sake of the truth. And they did this to stand up for what was right against Sisera and his army, to get rid of the surrounding tribes and the residue of Jabin's iron grip and restore the land and its territory back to its rightful owners. In their magnificent spirit of their willingness to offer their lives and sacrifice to God and their brethren is something that was amazing. They understood the need for sacrifice. But I want to notice something else about these governors. Look at what it says. They offered themselves, and look what it says in the word, among the people. Do you know what that word is? One single word in the Hebrew that means they offered themselves as a unit. They offered themselves as a congregation. What's the point of the record, brothers and sisters? Well, the point of the record is that this group of scribes and Bible students came and gave themselves as a unified congregation. They'd agreed as a group to respond. And with a common purpose and a common goal, together they marched at Barak's request to assist in the destruction of Sisera and Jabin, prepared to give their lives as an offering for the cause. This spirit is what made Deborah and Barak sing their hearts out and to call out to everyone in Israel to have a look at these wonderful examples who willingly gave their lives. And Deborah and Barak now call to all the classes of Israel so that they might understand now the freedom and acknowledge the freedom that they all now experienced from being bound in bondage and not able to walk around, to now they say to all those that ride and those that sit and those that walk, you guys that have got freedom, I want you to now understand where this came from. I want you to attribute the freedom and praise those who have volunteered. And look at the classes that they call out. To the upper class, to the rich, and to the travellers. There's three classes in verse 10. Speak ye that ride on white asses, that ride on these costly animals, the upper class, the ones that are riding around and enjoying that freedom, the horse riders, the pony club people. Sorry if you've got ponies. I've got one, but I'm not one of these. But these are those that ride on white horses. I've got a grey one, so I'm out, so it's all good. The rich, the second class, those that sit in judgment, actually the word judgment's better translated, garments. Those that sit on garments, these are the ones that were resting at home on the splendid tapestry and carpets. The rich in their sealed houses. And those that walk by the way, these are the travellers, those the common people that walked around all over Israel now, the freedom that they could experience, the riding, the sitting and the walking, they had a freedom now. And they were all now to ponder why they were free. And so they say in verse 11, they that are delivered from the noise of the archers and the places of the drawing of water, there shall they rehearse the righteous acts of Yahweh, even the righteous acts towards the inhabitants of his villages in Israel. And this verse has puzzled many of the translators. And so trying to piece it together, I think, it's quite difficult. But I think in the context, the best way to translate that sort of reads as best as this. From the sound of those who have been liberated at the watering holes, there they celebrate and recall the righteous acts of Yahweh, the righteous acts of leaders in Israel. I think that's the best way to translate that verse and what Deborah and Barak are trying to say, that the sound of everyone singing was supposed to be done at the meeting place where they all got together at the watering holes and they could there celebrate and recall the wonderful things that God, the righteous acts that Yahweh had done and the righteous acts of the leaders in Israel. It was both God's acts and those that had volunteered. You see, the whole nation had good reason to reflect as the leaders and warriors returned home to consider the mighty acts that Yahweh had achieved, that had performed amongst them, and the wonderful example that these warriors had given in standing up for what was right and for fighting the cause so that the nation might be liberated and to enjoy the freedom that they now experienced. Then, she says, shall the people of Yahweh go down to the gates. And the transition is so obvious, isn't it, between the fact in verse 8 when there was war in the gates, now there's freedom so that they can easily travel to the gates in verse 11. They can sing it at the watering holes outside and they can all now meet at the gate of the city, the place where everything happened, because now they could go and inherit the cities that they had lost. They truly had reason to sing, didn't they, brothers and sisters and young people, for the wonderful things that Yahweh had done. But now, Deborah and Barak turn their attention to the willing volunteers, the people's response to the calling for help. There were two types of responses, brothers and sisters. There were those who came, and there were those that didn't. And when the call came in verse 12 and 13, it came starkly. Awake, verse 12, awake, Deborah, awake, awake, utter a song. Arise, Barak, and lead thy captivity captive, thou son of Amminadab. And then what happens is verse 13. Then he made him that remaineth have dominion over the nobles among the people. Yahweh made me have dominion over the mighty. And you see, this is Barak now singing, I believe, of what actually happened in the story. Barak was to lead those that were both shaken awake, and Barak now was to lead those that had held them in captivity and to lead them captive. God's people had been held in captivity by Jabin and by Sisera, and now the call came to take those that had held them captive, captive themselves. And we saw this, we will see that this wonderful expression in our final exhort captures the remarkable symbology and work of our Lord Jesus Christ and how Paul says it should drive us to respond in volunteering amongst our ecclesias. So who did Barak lead? Who did respond to the call? Well, verse 13 says, it was him that remaineth. Not everybody responded. Only a portion of people came. But those people, he says, look what it says, they are noted as calling the people of Yahweh. The people of Yahweh. That's who came. Yahweh made him that remaineth have dominion over the people. A remnant are going to come. A faithful remnant who volunteered, who are going to put their life on the line to save their brethren. And brothers and sisters, throughout time, this has forever been true, hasn't it? It's always a remnant that has responded and remained faithful to Yahweh. You have the Levites who turn in Exodus chapter 32, the Nethinim in the time of Nehemiah, Daniel and his three friends and the friends surrounding them in captivity. The remnant that came in the exile is always a remnant that returns and that are motivated. It's not everybody. So where did these people come from and what was their motivation? Well, verse 14 says, it came first out of Ephraim. You see, it first came from the tribe of Ephraim, but only a few of them, a root of them, a root out of Ephraim. Verse 14, out of the root of Ephraim was there a root of them against Amalek. After thee, Benjamin, among thy people. Out of Maacah came down the governors. Out of Zebulun, them that handle the pen. And the princes of Issachar were with Deborah, even Issachar and also Barak. And they were sent, or he was sent on foot into the valley. But it was a remnant of the tribe of Ephraim. It was a few who had been instrumental that had taken their own inheritance. There was a root of them against Amalek. Why are we told that detail, brothers and sisters? See, we're told that there was a group of men that were constantly fighting Amalek amongst their own tribe and their own inheritance. They'd been battling Amalek. And they chose to respond. If there was anyone busy, it was these guys. And they stood up and realized the need of what was going to be required. They're the first to come because they've got the experience firsthand in fighting against the Canaanites. Out of the root of Amalek, those that come. See, they had seen the need and the benefits of removing and eradicating the enemies from their own territories. And so they're the first ones who respond to help those to fight against the Canaanites. And their example of leadership and their experience now inspires and encourages the tribe of Benjamin to join and respond. Because it says, and after thee, Benjamin, among thy people. You see, they stood up as a unit. Benjamin as an entire unit comes. It's the same word in verse 9. Among the people. They stand up as a congregation. Benjamin come unified in one accord to assist their brethren. And not only had Ephraim's example encouraged Benjamin, who was south of them, it also now inspires the half-tribe of Manasseh next to them on the west side of Jordan. Because from Machir, it says, came those down the governors and out of Zebulun, them that handle the pen. From Machir, see, Manasseh has two inheritances, one on the eastern side and one on the western side. Only one half is going to respond, the other half is not. And so those that were living on the western side of the River Jordan, those that were there with Benjamin and with Ephraim and the half-tribe of Manasseh, all come to respond. And Zebulun, they come forth, the governors or those that handle the pen. And whilst they weren't necessarily rulers, brothers and sisters, in their tribe, the word for governors being the writers, the example of Ephraim had inspired Bible students who understood their history and appreciated the law. They came to fight out the Canaanites. It was the inspired Bible students who understood what needed to be done. And they drop the pen and pick up the sword, willing to respond to the call. This is what Barak had mustered. This is who he had now encouraged. And on foot, this group, 10,000 men, are going to march down Mount Tabor and begin a battle and willingly offer themselves and their lives. And Deborah had inspired the leaders with Issachar to be with her. And together they all assembled to take out Sisera and his army. You know, brothers and sisters, it's a remarkable response, isn't it? That cascades when true leadership often occurs. You see, Deborah stands up, inspires Barak. Barak inspires Ephraim. Ephraim inspires Benjamin. Benjamin inspires the half-tribe of Manasseh. Zebulun come, and the princes of Issachar. And you see, this is what leadership does. It inspires people to go with them, and they assemble and go. The remarkable response of courageous Ephraim sent an inspirational message to the remnant of the faithful who rallied around Issachar and Zebulun with Deborah and Barak and marched as a unified body in mind and spirit and purpose into battle, volunteering their lives, brothers and sisters, for the salvation of their people. How could God not respond to that, brothers and sisters? Of course he does. There's a massive lesson for us, isn't there, brothers and sisters? How is our volunteering spirit when we're called to help? How do we respond when people stand up and call for assistance? Do we have that kind of volunteering spirit amongst our ecclesias? How far are we prepared to go for the salvation of our brothers and sisters? These people were going to give their lives. How far are we prepared to go? Can we give a bit more? Probably. Do we have the "here am I, send me" spirit? Or the "here am I, please send someone else"? You see, leadership is all about service. It requires us to have a volunteering spirit that is prepared to give because we know and because we love and because we understand just how much God has done for us. We understand it's good for the truth. We understand it enhances God's purpose. And so therefore we serve, even albeit reluctantly, to give that God might be honored. God's purpose is about people, brothers and sisters. It requires volunteers. But not everyone will respond. Not everyone responds at all times. In fact, it didn't happen here either. Because now Deborah and Barak turn to call out the slackers who chose not to come. And they're going to represent, brothers and sisters, all the types of excuses and responses that we give when we decide not to respond, to stand up and volunteer. And the first ones are, unfortunately, the ones that should have been the leaders. Reuben. Here's Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. The 40,000 who went over armed in front of Israel, now disasters because they choose to not come. Look what it says. Reuben, the firstborn of Jacob's sons, ought to be the leaders, now show their lack of leadership and direction. So it says in the record in verse 16, for the divisions of Reuben, there was great searchings of heart. Oh, brothers and sisters, there was great searchings of heart. The divisions of Reuben, the thoughts, the intentions or the resolutions, there were great thoughts of heart. There were divisions, that there were different groups having differing opinions of whether they should or shouldn't come. And the point I think Deborah makes in this story is, well, they'd had plenty of meetings about Barak's request. They'd held a number of differing views amongst their community. Some wanted to respond. In fact, others were resolved that they should go. They had great intentions to go. But when it came to it, they failed to do anything at all. Instead, it says in verse 16, why abodest thou among the sheepfolds to hear the bleatings of the flock? They remained there with the sheep. See, Reuben were renowned for their great pastures, their magnificent flocks that they had. Whilst they wanted to help, or at least some of them wanted to, life was pretty busy. We got lots going on. And look, we've got the sheep to look after, and there's things that have to be done. And we should go. We really should go. There's things on. We should be part of them. They wanted to. They intended to, but they failed to. Now, brothers and sisters, it's a great lesson in that, isn't it, brothers and sisters? Warning, in fact. intention isn't action. Intention isn't action. We've got to follow through, brothers and sisters, and execute exactly what the call is. Oh, and that wasn't all. Gilead, Dan, and Asher, well, they didn't even have intentions to respond to the call. Gilead, it says, abode beyond Jordan. Dan remained in their ships. Asher continued on the seashore and abode in his breaches. So Gilead, the other half tribe of Manasseh on the east side of Jordan, and the record says they were beyond Jordan. Oh, it's a bit far for us to travel. I'm so sorry. Oh, would be a bit of difficult for us to work out how to get across, and then we're going to come all the way over to see you, and it's a bit far really for us at this point in time. Thanks for the offer, but no. It's not really affecting us over here. We've actually quite comfy, thanks. It's not our problem. Dan remained in ships. Their territory in the north was included all the seaports and the coasts and the Mediterranean. The tribe made their money from fishing. Their livelihood was of more relevance to them. I'm so sorry. We're fishing today. We'll be fishing next week as well and the week after. We're too busy to come and help. Look, the weather's so good we can't miss it. You'll understand, I'm sure. Their brethren were dying, brothers and sisters. But they were too busy to help. It was disgraceful behavior, brothers and sisters. But we can do it too. Asher, well, he continues on the seashore. He abode in his breeches. They weren't even out in their boats. At least Dan were out in their boats. These guys abode on the seashore. They just refused to respond. It says they continued. They continued on the seashore to dwell permanently. Asher just kept on doing what they're doing. And they just refused to even acknowledge that there was even a problem. It's not ours. It's not our battle. Life's perfect where we are. Sorry, this battle's not ours. It's yours. Go away. For these tribes, it was either too far to go, or life was too busy, or employment was too more important. Well, it wasn't really their battle to fight. It wasn't their problem. And they show a complete and utter disregard for the lack of care and no concern, brothers and sisters, for the plight of their brethren whatsoever. And this is in stark contrast, says Deborah in verse 18, to Zebulun and Naphtali, they say, a people that jeopardized their own lives unto the death in the high places of the field. You couldn't get a starker contrast, could you? Brothers and sisters, that's the lesson, isn't it? We're defined in these moments, aren't we? It's when we're busy that God tests us. It is when we are tired that God tries us. It is when we are stressed that we truly see who we really are and how much we're prepared to sacrifice for one another. It is through these moments and through trial and life, brothers and sisters, that God molds and shapes us and we find out what we really are made of. We've got to give to others as we have been given by God. God has called us, brothers and sisters, to respond, to assist his brethren, to fight against the enemies. So how are you going to respond? You see, true leadership, brothers and sisters, requires the ultimate spirit of love and willing sacrifice. The spirit of a volunteer who stands up and says, here am I. Send me. Because if we refuse to show care or show love or respect for our brothers and sisters in need, we truly haven't understood or appreciated or valued the love that God has showed us. You see, God gave his only begotten Son, who laid down his life as a willing volunteer, who jeopardized his life, brothers and sisters, that whilst we, as yet sinners, might have the hope of salvation and eternal life. And he left us not a request, not an option, not even a suggestion, brothers and sisters. He left us a commandment that we love one another as he has loved us. How much do we value that sacrifice, brothers and sisters, and young people? How much does his example of leadership inspire you to respond? Well, only you can answer that question. But it demands an answer. It's your choice. You have to make the right one. Do you know, it's remarkable, brothers and sisters, because through the work of two remarkable women, God showed he would work with anyone to restore his promised inheritance. And through the work of these wonderful two ladies, God restores a land that was condensed with no food, no inheritance, nothing, to a land that flows with milk and honey because these two stood up, a bee and a goat. And through faithful service, the land is restored and returned to a state that God's blessings might once more be flowed down upon his people. May, brothers and sisters, we be inspired and encouraged and strengthened by these examples of faith who, in their distress and in their oppression, in their time of trial, they learnt to trust in their heavenly Father and who put their hand up to serve and help their brothers and sisters. They were weak, meek enough and open-minded enough to be inspired by others, who then inspired the next generation, who inspired the rest of their people and inspired others to come. Let's be those of the tribe who respond to the call and not those who didn't.